Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us again this week. When we think of successful leadership, there has been a significant shift in the last few years. And thanks to the pandemic, it will speed the need and demand for what we call essential human skills, formerly known as soft skills. These attributes include empathy, emotional intelligence, deep listening, coaching, vulnerability, courage, just to name a few. Each one of these has enough depth and importance to be its own master's degree program, should we want to master them, pun intended. So how can we become successful leaders without stopping time so we can learn all of these essential skills? Tony Gamble set out to answer this question by providing the tools and skills for getting it right when it matters most, which is also the title of his new book. Tony brings more than 20 years of executive experience delivering impactful coaching, consulting, and leadership solutions within global for-profit, nonprofit, research, government, and higher educational industries. He has proven experience collaborating with organizations in delivering meaningful results in the areas of leadership development, executive coaching, talent development, team effectiveness, and strategic planning. He's a Forbes leadership contributor and the co-author of the upcoming book, Getting It Right When It Matters Most, which is exactly what we talked about in our conversation with him. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Uncover the Human, where every conversation revolves around enhancing all the connections in our lives.
Whether that's with our families, coworkers, or even ourselves.
When we can be our authentic selves, magic happens.
This is Christina Amigoni.
And this is Alex Cullimore.
Let's dive in.
Authenticity means freedom.
Authenticity means going with your gut.
Authenticity is bringing 100% of yourself, not just the parts you think people want to see, but all of you.
Being authentic means that you have integrity to yourself.
It's the way our intuition is whispering something deep-rooted and true.
Authenticity is when you truly know yourself. You remember and connect to who you were before others told you who you should be.
It's transparency, relatability, no frills, no makeup, just being.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Uncover the Human. This week we are joined with our guest, Tony Gamble. He is the author of the upcoming book, Getting It Right When It Matters Most, Self-Leadership for Work and Life. Welcome to the podcast, Tony.
Thank you all. I'm excited to be here and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all today.
Welcome. Glad you're here.
We're excited to have you.
Yes.
So why don't you walk us through a little bit about, let's just talk a little bit about your background and your story getting into writing this book. Just give us a little overview.
It's interesting. I'll go way back because I think it's relevant to sort of who I am. Is I wasn't someone that understood what I wanted to do at an early age. Going through school, I wasn't that motivated because I'm not just a natural learner. I like to learn for application. And anyway, I got out of high school and went to college, got a general business degree and went into sales because that's what my dad had always done, right? I got there and it was interesting. I had a manager who was a psychology major. And they felt like I had potential. And she would always ask these deep questions. You're a really good manager. At one point, she said, Tony, I don't know how to motivate you. And I said, Christy, I don't know either. Let me think about it and we'll talk tomorrow. So I thought about it. And over the night, I sort of came to a conclusion. So I met with her the next day. And when we were speaking, I just said, Christy, I was selling long distance at the time to different small businesses. I go, I think if I sold every account in this city, it wouldn't motivate me. Anyway, that tracked me to leaving that position, right? But it was great because I left to work with Outward Bound down in Florida. And I worked with adjudicated youth. And it was interesting because I came from a middle-class family. My parents were just petrified that I was leaving this good corporate job for a $10 a day internship with Outward Bound. Right. And I'm 22, 23 at the time. And they're like, OK, you got to get on with making money. And so anyway, I went to Outward Bound and I worked with adjudicated kids. We'd go on month long trips and down the rivers. And these kids had been court appointed to these programs. And what I learned is a couple of things. I learned more from them than they ever learned from me. But I learned a couple of things. First, I learned my passion. I love working with groups. I love working with leadership. I love building teams together. First time I'd ever been jazzed about what I did. Second thing is I learned that those kids were really good kids and they were in really bad situations, and how situation and context really can drive where we end up. And it was just like such an eye opener. Actually, I would look at kids across while we were going around that I felt were a lot better kids than me at that age, and in so many ways. And they were in those situations. So anyway, important learning for me. I'd say all of that because that's where I found my passion. From that, I started doing outward-bound professional development programs up in Baltimore, North Carolina, DC. It was great. I was working for these shorter programs, one day to a week. And I did that and I was doing well with it, but I was like, there's got to be more to this stuff, right, than the experiential piece. And so I went back and got my master's, did that in Asheville, which was great because it was a beautiful place. Finished my master's. I'd worked up in Baltimore for Outward Bound. They have a center there. And I got an interview for T. Rowe Price. And I was like, I will never go back to Baltimore, but I'm going to go up and take this interview because I got a lot of friends there, right? I'm going to talk to my friends. It was a great opportunity. I got the job on the spot. I worked for them for 3 years. Then I transitioned to a conservation organization out of DC, which gave me a great opportunity to see the world and do this work around leadership and team effectiveness. I worked in over 40 countries. It was great. I got married and I started having a family, and the travel wasn't great, right? And so I went to Virginia Tech. I had a similar role. I led the function of the Department of Talent Development, Organizational Development, Leadership Development. Was there for a while, and then I came down to North Carolina, and for a decade, I was vice president of a global research organization called RTI International. And anyway, that took me through about 3 years ago when I decided I'd done that for a while. I was ready to make a change and went out on consulting, and part of that was to write this book. And so anyway, a winding story to where I got. But what I think the point was that I didn't really have my first job at T. Rowe until I was 30. And that's late for a lot of people, right? But it was best for me. And it's amazing. I got kids now that they feel pressured to know what they want to do at 16, 17, 18. I'm just like, no, figure it out. But anyway, that's probably a little more than you wanted on that story, but that's my meandering path.
So that's a great story of all of the different leadership roles you've had. It sounds like one of your biggest passions then has been in the development of people. I mean, from that first Outward Bound on.
Yeah, it has been. I think my niche has been working for mission-driven, research-based global organizations. Has been awesome. And I do like working with people. And I felt what works for me around that is what I found is what works best for people works best for organizations in the long term as well. And so that's just such a nice place to be. There's a lot of tensions there, but it's for the long term. If you're not looking short term, it's always the right answer. And so that enables me to have done work that I can feel passionate about, right? And that I can feel is meaningful. And also I feel like it's played to some of the strengths that I bring. So it's been great. I've been fortunate and blessed to be in that space.
What you just said is why you're on the podcast, so we can wrap it up. Everybody just listen to that, paste it on your wall, put it on your mirror, read it every morning. Long term, if you focus on the people, the organization succeeds. That's the secret.
You've just uncovered our entire mission statement, which is that, if you can work with the people first, that's where everything starts. That's where you get to see the growth, the potential for the organization, for the groups, for the teams. It's an incredibly powerful way to start and look at things.
It is. And it's a simple statement, but it becomes really complex. I actually just wrote an article last week about how important it is to lead with empathy and create clear accountability. And the article basically said accountability is part of empathy, and you can't be effective at leading with empathy without it. And the reason being is because accountability creates clear expectations, which is central for people to succeed. If you look at the Gallup Q12, that's the first one. I'm clear on my expectations. And then creating clear accountability enables people to build trust with one another, right? Which is empathic, right? And it also enables people to succeed. Because if you have clear accountability and you know what success looks like and clear expectations, you can strive for that. And clear goals has always been a foundation of performance and effectiveness and motivation. So really, it's a paradox within that, right? Empathy and accountability together. But doing it gets complex, and the speed and the challenges, and sometimes we become so focused on just the task. And it's real easy not to take that space to understand that we need to do both.
The focus on the task is where I see most of the challenges, for sure. And I was just talking about it this morning, actually. There's a sense of, we know there's compassion. We know that there's empathy in the leaders, in the person. But yet it's not getting demonstrated. It's not put into action because there's this, oh, well, but it's about this quarter. It's not about the next 3 years. So this quarter, I have to lay off 20% of my staff to make the financials work. But there's little thought process into what's the impact of thinking about this quarter 2 years from now.
100%. And what I would say with that is there's good reason around that. And it's twofold. First is, the reason we get promoted into leadership positions isn't because we're relationship oriented. It's because we get stuff done. It's because we're great at completing the task. And so what got us to a leadership position will not get us to the next place. But that's been ingrained in us through everything we've done in our life, our education, being graded on tests, our universities, the way that we've gotten positive feedback has been all about completing tasks. When you become a leader, it's like task and relationships around that. The other thing that makes that really complex for leaders is that our minds aren't evolved to be able to focus on relationship and task at the same time. And when we're focused on relationships, the parts that focus on task in our minds sort of shut off, and then vice versa. When we're focusing on tasks, we don't focus on relationship. And a story I give all the time is that when my kids were young, trying to get them all in the van to get somewhere on time. I'm sort of the type of person that I don't like being late, right? And so, you know, you're getting everyone, you got three kids and a wife, and we're trying to get everything together. And at some point, I'm threatening them with, they'll never play with their friends again. Yes. I won't send them to college. If you don't get in this van, whatever bombs I have, right, to the people that I love the most, it's because I'm focused on that task. And all of my relational skills just went out the door. And so being mindful of that in complexity and in the face of deadlines, and it becomes hard. And it takes a lot. And it takes a lot of rigor to develop that. So we don't prepare people for that. So I agree 1,000%. And most of the time, it's not people's long-term intention or goals either, but it's the way that they impact others.
I like that word relational, and I know you brought that up a lot in some of the framework for your book. You bring up the idea of these are the relational moments in our lives that we have the most challenge with. I wonder if you could just explain a little bit about your framework around leadership, and you talk about it being part of the important and complex and relational portions of our lives. So I'm curious how that works.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. And in the book, Getting It Right When It Matters Most, we use this concept called moments that matter. And those are important, our important moments, our most important moments, complex, meaning that there's no simple answer. There's no one right answer, and relational. And working with talent development and working with trying to grow people my whole career, it's been real clear that the people that succeed the most and professionally and also in life are the people that handle these situations better, that they're more advanced in succeeding in their most important, complex, and relational matters, their moments that matter most. And also what's become really clear is when I was working with leaders and high potentials and employees is that self-leadership is key to getting those moments right. The challenge is all of our energy and focus and dollars corporately and children growing up is invested in building discipline skills, math, English, our technical skills. And so we're great at that. But what we haven't built is the foundation, which is self-leadership, that all that sits upon. And the rigor for that and the investment for that and the importance of that has not been established. And what I found is that's the differentiator for folks. In today's world, it is easy for people to acquire knowledge and skills and information. It's at the click of a button, right? It's with our phone, right? It's so available, more so than ever. That is not the differentiator anymore. I've worked with so few people that the reason that they didn't succeed or that they've been blocked is because they couldn't learn technical or discipline thing. That's not the reason. The self-differentiator is those that can lead self. And so that's the whole premise of this book is how do we become very deliberate and looking at building these skills that we hear all the time, but they're very vertical. So for example, self-awareness, understanding our overall purpose, our strengths, our weaknesses, emotional intelligence, looking at social agility, emotional regulation, social difficult conversations, learning agility, leadership agility, mindfulness. We've got all those things, right? But so few people have time to read all of those things, but they're so important. So what we've tried to do in this book is say, what are the fewest, most important things you need to know that are practical and replicable for you to be able to exhibit your best self in your hardest situation? And that's what we call moments of matter.
I like that a lot. And I have been obsessed with the term self-leadership since you introduced it to us a couple of weeks back when we were talking about this. I love that term. And I wonder if you could expand on that a little bit, the just self-leadership as this core and even where you might have stumbled upon it yourself, where you came across this term.
So I think as I was writing this book, the term came to us. And actually, it was this co-author book, Scott Carbonar, and I have written it. And his wife is our copy editor in relation to this until we sent it to the publisher. And she's used the term. And so I was like, that is the anchor. That's the hook that all of this is together. And the book is built on a model which puts everything together. And it's called the SOAR model, S-O-A-R. And SOAR stands for self, S, outlook, action, and reflection. And really what this does is, we wanted to look at what are the fewest, most important things for you to get it right in your moments that matter most. And we didn't want to look at it from a concept perspective. We wanted to look at it from a human perspective. And the way that we engage with these moments that matter most are we bring ourselves to every moment that we engage with. Now, when we engage in that moment, it starts to impact our outlook. Is it emotionally threatening? Are we bringing perception bias? Understanding how to manage that, right? And then that leads to action. And in the world that we live in, at home and our business, the key action that we have is our conversation. So how do we understand our best intent in the moment? How do we ask quality questions that drive relationships and empathy and trust? How do we engage in high-stakes conversations? How do we manage defensiveness with ourselves and others? And then the R is for reflection, which is how do we learn, get feedback, well, practice, learn, get feedback, and reflect. And it's a model, right? And that's all around agility, continuous learning. And so that is a person-centric model to start to look at how can I look at this in a replicable, practical way so I can slow these moments down and start to build on the fewest, most important things I need to do to be successful. And so because I spent the last 25 years with these concepts, what we did is we pulled together from self what's most important and practical for people to know, from outlook what's most important and practical for people to know. And we've really tried to look at it from two ways. You can look at it from a model, which is I bring myself, manage my outlook, choose the right actions, reflection that improves self-awareness, that and so it goes like that. Or if you want to look at it and say, hey, I'm good with self, I really want to look at how do I manage my outlook better. You can look at it vertically as well. So it's a cycle, but you can also look at it vertically. And that is what's new for us. That is what, how do we bring a rigor to what's the foundation of success and a practical approach to that? And it may be out there and I just haven't seen it, but in all, I've been searching for it. And that was my gap. And that's why I felt like, okay, let's create it. And so that's sort of the premise of the book and how the book is designed and the structure of it.
It addresses that there's all these pieces, there's your emotional intelligence, the agility, all these things that somehow to become a successful leader, we're supposed to become experts on, and then bring all the little key points of all of them and how we see them and how they apply to us in that 10 second time that we have between stimulation and response at that moment. It's impossible. It's so deep. Every one of those is so deep.
It is impossible to be perfect at it. We can get better at it, right? And it is hard. And I mess up every day. I do. I think I, in part, came up with this concept because I need it as a leader the most. And so it isn't about being perfect. And you can do everything right in relation to these the concepts or that we're bringing to the table. And situations still may not let you get it right. You may not get it right the way that you defined right, but it does let you bring your best self. It does let you walk within your values. It does let you choose your actions instead of reacting. And it does let you grow. So even if you didn't get what you wanted from it, you've evolved. There's a story I tell in the book about at one of my jobs, the organization changed and there had been some decisions somewhere else in the organizations. And I had a new leader that came in that had a different vision. And because of that, they were going to take a significant part of my job away from me. I'll never forget it. I was in the office meeting my new manager for the first time. And he said to me, he goes, "We're going to take all of this stuff away from you." And I was like, "You're not going to assess? And what if the customers say we're doing a good job?" He said, "No." And I reacted. I didn't respond. I didn't get it right when it matters most. And I said, "Well, we probably need to look at a transition plan around that." And I say all that is because the person that they had brought in was also in a double bind. She had moved her family there. She had moved late. And we were in a situation where we were at odds with one another. But we talked and we understood each other's situation. It was tense. It was hard. I transitioned out. And fast forward 5 years. She's in an executive position in the same town that I moved to. New state, executive position, great organization. She calls me and says, "Hey, would you like to help out with these things?" She had responsibility for talent development, and she ended up bringing me in. It did not work 5 years earlier because the situation didn't allow it. But when she came to North Carolina, where I am, we had lunch. We talked about it. We debriefed it. We left it in a good situation, not because I expected her to call me in later. And 5 years earlier, we didn't know that. But even though we didn't get it right from what I wanted at the time, I got to live the way that I wanted to, and I got to leave in a manner that I wanted to, that aligned with my values. And because of that, it came back around 5 years later and introduced a lot of opportunity for my business. You said sometimes in the moment you mess it up. Absolutely. And I do it all the time. But if we can more often than not bring our best selves to the situation, even if we don't get it right that time, the accumulation of that is going to serve us well.
It's really a good way of looking at it. And that's why I love the fact that you bring reflect into the whole model itself. I mean, just getting that chance and building it right in to say, look, this is about not getting it right the first time. This is about growing the idea of what is right and moving towards that. And that's a great anecdote of that exact thing happening. You have this where it didn't go right the first time, but if you don't give up on it, if you keep the relationship in mind and you're willing to go just work on it as humans, there's this whole upside that, you know, nobody would predict, but it's only accessible if you allow it to have that relational context.
Yeah. My view today is the best tool for learning. I had big budgets when I had talent development and organizational development. The best tool for learning in today's world is reflection. Adults learn from experience. And the only way that we can advance, and you hear all the time around learning agility or continuous learning or continuous improvement in today's world, and it's true. One of the key reasons leaders fail is because change happens and they don't learn in that situation. But the only way we can do that is reflect. And taking the time to reflect is something that people aren't. It's not built into many of our training programs. Well, at the end of an exercise, when you do a role play, you reflect, but it's not built into our daily structures. And that is our best way to learn. We learn from doing. I ask all the time in training classes, it's like, Think of an example where you learned an important lesson that stuck with you. And people think about it and they share it. And then I go, okay, how many people learn that lesson in a formal training situation? And nobody raises their hand, right? What they learned it from was through experience, through working, through observing, through partnering, and then reflection and doing something different. So to your point, reflection is key for us to be successful because the world's changing at a pace that none of us can keep up with and the complexity. And if we're just getting a little bit better each time and reflecting, it's so much easier. In the book, I talk about a reflection model. It's by a gentleman named Rolf. I think it came out at the 1990s. But I love it because it's so simple. It's called the so what, now what model. At the end of something, just go, what happened? So what does that mean? Now what? I was working with a group the other day, and all reflection is about, it's not to beat yourself up, but now what? It's what does that mean moving forward? What have I learned and how do I adjust? And that, to the SOAR model, that brings a new level of self-awareness, right? Which enables me to bring a better outlook, which enables me for better actions, and I reflect again. So that cyclical aspect, and I love that you hit on reflection because I think that's one that it's maybe the easiest to do. It just takes time. There's no skill in it, but it's the one that we don't put importance on or do that often.
And don't have the tools for it. Sometimes it's, I know I'm supposed to reflect, but I don't have the time. And even if I took the 5 minutes, 10 minutes or a day, what questions am I asking myself? What am I doing with the reflection besides beating myself up of, oh, I didn't show up as my best self. I shouldn't have yelled. I shouldn't have stormed out. I shouldn't have said no. You know, and then it becomes this should have done and what you shouldn't have done as opposed to what actually happened and what can I learn from it? And like, no moment is perfect. I'm not perfect. Nobody's expecting anybody else to be perfect, but it's the what you do after that that matters.
Yeah. As you were saying that, there's a term we don't should on yourself, right?
Yes.
You're right. And Carol Dweck sort of mastered this space, right? With growth versus fixed mindset. You know, her concepts are around a fixed mindset is I'm supposed to know all the answers. And if I don't, I need to sort of hide or I need to deflect or I need to become defensive versus a growth mindset of I don't know the answer yet. I'm still learning. We're all evolving and we're not perfect. And I think a lot of people have a hard time giving grace to themselves. We're such a performance culture, right? And the dichotomy of that is that performance really in the long run is based on growth and ongoing learning, taking the long-term perspective of that. And because it's no fun to just beat yourself up. It's like, oh, I didn't do good at that, right? And that's why I love this, the what, so what, now what models, because it ends with, now what am I going to do with this? It's always looking for moving it forward. And it's simple. Right. And to your point, I want it to be practical and simple for folks.
That's a really good model for it. And I like what you said about like the fixed and growth mindset. It reminds me that if you want to change things, you have to have more of that growth mindset because you want something different. I mean, the fixed mindset is by default, it's fixed. You've got the box set. You've got the boundaries set. You know what you know. But if you're only willing to live in that box and you're not willing to grow that, then you can only live in that box, at which point you can fight the same fight over and over again. You can have the same conversations over and over again if you're not willing to try something new and assume that something can or should change.
Yeah. Chris Argus wrote a great article, and it's one of the Harvard Business Review's best articles. It's around why smart people have such a hard time learning. What he says in the article, Argus basically says, is that people that are really good and smart have always gotten the right answers. And eventually we all get to a level of complexity that we don't have the right answers. And what they do is they just tried harder doing the same things because it had always worked for them in the past versus looking at what do I need to do differently? How do I need to change? How do I need to evolve? And people that have been right so often in their lives and it's served them so well have a hard time of putting that over to the side and making the adjustments and doing things differently. Well, who wrote the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There? Maybe Goldsmith, I'm not 100% sure. But it's based on that concept is people that have been really successful have a hard time making that adjustment you just mentioned, is making the adjustment. I don't need to try harder with the same things that have always served me well. But that's a blanket that's comfortable, that's hard to get rid of.
Yes. Well, and to tie it back to your original statement on leadership, how people are promoted to leadership because, well, they keep doing the tasks well. You know, from a logical point of view, if you lose logic to here, you think like, well, when I'm a leader, I just have to keep doing what I've been doing because I've got promoted because of that. And it's so hard to let go because being in a leadership position has nothing to do with how well you were doing your tasks.
Yeah. And you can understand that rationally, but it's hard. In the complexity and the speed and the relational complexities to really let go of. And that's why, unfortunately, so many people micromanage is because they want to control it. Nobody can do it as well as me. If I let it go, it won't be done the way I want it to be done, which is not scalable, which is not empowering, which is not, I mean, we all like to work differently, but none of us want to be micromanaged, right? But that is one of the biggest defaults of new leaders and managers, because that's how they've gotten there. And we have not set people up for success in making those transitions, because it's not that they're bad people or that they want people to have bad experiences. It's just they're relying on these old models that are no longer working for them. And it's not just with leadership. If you look at the research around just career development, it's people are having to engage with more people to get their work done. More work's being done in matrix teams. People are in so many different locations and geographies to do things. The multidisciplinary and transdisciplinary nature of the work that we're doing relies, you don't have to be a leader. You can be an individual contributor, but and your success is dependent on others now. The world's changed. So we're all struggling with that. You don't have to be an executive to struggle with that. We all struggle with that to some degree.
I was just thinking about what you're talking about, Nick, the models that we have growing up. And so it's to your point of people who have been right a lot of the time. I think there's two layers to it. There's a lot of shaming around making mistakes. There's people who feel like they feel bad for having made mistakes. So they avoid mistakes at all costs, which pushes you right back into more of a fixed mindset, or you've been rewarded for being right. And so you assume like, well, I have to be right to continue to be rewarded. And that's what you're saying too, Christina. That's how I got promoted, by being right enough times. I need to continue to be right. And it's interesting to think about those two different forces, because it sounds like oppositional. You've got the shame, but you've also got the reward, and it can still lead both paths down a model that's not going to help you long-term.
Dweck's worked on growth mindset, and her book called Growth Mindset talks about research. And what they found is that kids that are rewarded based on the results of their work, and you did great, you got an A+, great job, tend to develop a fixed mindset, because if they're not getting that reward on the result, they're not good enough anymore. And she really talks about making the shift about rewarding the work, rewarding the effort, rewarding, you really worked hard on that. That's awesome. You really struggled through that and then came to this answer. Good work around that versus always rewarding the result. And that's not much different than organizations. What do we get rewarded on? Most people get a rating, right? It is a rating. I got a 4, I got a 5. And if I got a 3 on a 5-point scale average, I've never been average. I'm angry around that. And so the systems create that protection. But what it does is it limits learning. And learning is the key to organizations that can continually evolve and grow. Look at all the organizations that aren't around anymore because they were afraid to learn. It's an interesting dichotomy. And you're right. It's also interesting that it's not our first reaction. It's not our gut feel to be okay not to have the right answer.
It's just interesting to think about the incentive structures we put up. And you can see why you put up those incentive structures to the point we were talking about earlier. The leaders have tasks that they want to get done. And so you can start focusing on those tasks. And it's very easy to want to be like, well, I want to reward people who did the tasks. You want to hand out those gold stars, right? I mean, you want the tasks done. You're in charge of getting those things done. But you can then create that system where actually there's a book called Drive, I think. I'll look that one up and put it in the show notes. But I mean, he talks about the difference between an if-then reward, where like you basically set up, if you get this done, then we'll do this. Whereas a much more motivating one is, now that you've done that, like you don't even know the reward is coming, now that that has been completed, we're actually going to go do this. And you know, then it wasn't, you no longer tie the work to the reward. It just happens to be like, oh, that was, you know, that that works a little better. It works better with the humans wanting autonomy model, which is much more powerful.
Yeah, there's a model that we introduced in the book called the ARC model. Basically, it's from a theory called self-determination theory. And ARC stands for autonomy, relatedness, and competence. But what self-determination theory says are those are the main social motivation factors of a human, but they're also our biggest social threats. And so if you think about it, when you feel threatened in a professional or in a personal situation, you can almost always go back and pinpoint, do I feel like my autonomy, that I'm not having influence, that I'm being told what to do? Is this situation negatively impacting an important relationship at work, my boss or my colleagues or my peers or a customer? Is this situation threatening my competence? I don't feel like I'll be able to be successful anymore. I'll lose my ability to succeed. If you can put people in situations that enable that arc, your autonomy, relatedness, and competence, those are your long-term motivators. Those are the ones that are sustainable versus these more money, more position. You can't do that very often, right? If you're in the peak and the swing of your career, you're lucky to get a promotion every 2 years, right? It's not sustainable. So what's sustainable for motivation is trying to put people in situations that enable them to be autonomous, enable them to have positive relationships, enable them to be competent. But at the opposite side of that is, if people are feeling threatened, it's probably because you took away their autonomy, or they perceive taking away their relatedness, and they perceive taking away their competence. And we talk about that in the book. That's really the foundation to when we start having negative emotions. Negative emotions drive bad decisions because they drive reactions, right? And so how do you regulate yourself in relation to that? How do you build equilibrium around that so you can move forward and act and choose your actions in an effective manner to bring your best self for those things? So human motivation is interesting. And if we're relying on the outcomes as leaders, we're never going to be very successful because there's not enough carrots there.
Very good point. Yes.
I think that should be the subtitle for this episode, Not Enough Carrots. There's not enough carrots in the world for this.
And sticks don't work. So let's not go down that path.
Yeah. But I think it relates all to what you all are focused on is at the foundation, what we all want is to have input autonomy. We want to have solid, good, positive relationships. And we want an opportunity that enables us to become. And so I love the model because every time I've worked as a leader with someone on my team that starts to become struggling, it's been a good lens for me to look at is what are they not getting in this? Why are they feeling threatened? What am I not providing? What is the situation not providing around that? And it goes back to, if I serve that long term, I'm going to be more successful as an organization, as a leader, because this person is going to be more successful. Now it becomes difficult when I don't have a scenario that enables that within my context. And then you have to engage in people about how do you transition to a place that's going to enable that for you. It's not that you're a bad person. It's just I have been the person in a scenario where I didn't have autonomy, good relation, or the relationships that I wanted, and I didn't feel like I could be competent. And sometimes the situation, you don't have a leverage point to change it, and you've got to transition, which is all around self-awareness, right?
But if both sides of the equation are willing to work on that, you get to, like, if you can have a leader that's like acknowledging either that one of the ARC values is not going to be able to be pulled, or you can acknowledge that for yourself, it becomes a much easier dialogue because you're no longer just fighting against what is not possible.
Or it becomes less personal.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
It does right? become less personal.
Because what we do as humans is you're not doing this. You are not.
Yes.
You can't do
oh,
this.
Yes.
And is it lazy? Is it unmotivated? Is it you're not a team player? Wow. Those are hard conversations and not going to be very productive. And so that's where we go as people versus a foundation of, what about this situation isn't feeding your needs? What am I not providing that's not feeding your needs? That's a conversation we can have. But we draw conclusions when someone's not performing because I'm the leader, right? And if they're not performing, it looks bad on me. I'm threatened. You're not a hard worker. You don't care about your job. You don't work hard enough. You're not a good team player. Wow. That's when we end up hurting relationships. And as a leader, I mean, you know, unfortunately, sometimes leaders have the authority when that goes so bad, they just fire somebody, right? But at the end of the day, it could have been avoided because the way that we came about it.
I can definitely relate to a lot of that, having been on the receiving end of those. And your whole identity is now tied into you're not capable of doing this. And I'm like, well, but I am capable of doing this. It's just this situation is not allowing me to. So what if we talk about the situation as opposed to talking about me and my identity and my competence now and throw away the last 3 years when I was competent for 3 years?
Yeah, absolutely. There's two aspects of results. It's situation and behaviors. And what we focus on as humans are your behaviors. We so often don't delve into what about this situation that's not enabling us to be successful around that. Do we all have behaviors that we need to modify and adjust and grow? 100%. 100%. There are some situations that if we, it doesn't matter how effective we are at modifying and changing and growing our behaviors, the situation's not going to enable us to be successful. And if we don't have a lever for that, it's a bad situation and we need to start to look at how do we transition to put ourselves in a better place. And that's hard. I've been in situations where that takes a year, 18 months, because I've got a family and I need to do it in a way that's, if you're starting to do that, you're not helpless. And if you become helpless in that situation, it's bad for your health and it's awful for your well-being. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I like the idea of changing the situation because that ends up being such a powerful lever, like when you can make some adjustment to the situation. And one story that I've heard that I think it's a great kind of encapsulation is there's an organization trying to help people. Like they wanted more engagement. They wanted better employee engagement. And so they went through the usual cultural processes where they decide they want to like spin up happy hours or they try, you know, employee groups and things like that. And they found out that when they finally, instead of just pushing these changes out, just asked people what made them feel disengaged, they found out that they could resolve a bunch of disengagement by buying a new printer because the printer was so bad. People were so frustrated having to deal with it. All that was really needed was like a $400 printer. And everybody's like, oh, thank goodness. This is much easier.
And you know what that went to? That went to their competence. They could not be competent because they weren't getting what they needed from that and they were feeling threatened. And it went back to that. Or they didn't feel autonomous because they didn't. I mean, one of the Gallup's Q12 is I have the resource needed to do my job, right? And when you look at the Gallup's Q12 for engagement, that one of those is I have the tools and resources to do my job. It's foundational. And what you were saying in that story is people were feeling threatened at a level of their foundation because of a printer.
Well, and that reflection piece really helps from a self-leadership point of view, because having been in that situation where actually all three of the arcs were taken away, so that was definitely a full-on flaring, threatened situation, which I transitioned myself out of. But the competence piece was the one that was really tough for me to get past, because it was years of building my confidence on my competence up to then see it shattered in a matter of weeks. And so when looking back, the reflection piece that helped me, which I did through working with coaches, was to understand what was missing in that. Why did I feel incompetent? And what was missing was that I didn't have the resources to do my job and be successful, which now I use as a lever when I go into project or as a company when we are engaging with clients. That's kind of part of the, we will work with you if we have access to technology, people, and information directly and freely whenever we need it. If you say no to any of these, we can't work with you, because I learned on my own skin that what was missing.
And so going back to the SOAR model, that reflection piece for you uncovered the now what that
yes.
brought you to a better understanding of self-awareness. This is what I need to bring my best self moving forward. I'm real clear of when my worse self.
Oh, yes.
But that reflection informs our self-awareness, which research says self-awareness is foundational for us to be effective, right? Reflection is key to broadening and better understanding self, which is critically important. And so that's why they're all connected. And that's why I love this model, is because it's not coming from a concept. It does include all these concepts and important concepts, but it's coming from a person's view, right? It's coming from, this is replicable, and this is how I experience situations. And I don't have to learn it in a vertical of, let me study all this research on this one topic that is, you know, and we talk about difficult conversations. We call them high stakes. Let me learn all of this. Well, that's great, but it's out there. How do you put this in the way that I experienced it as a human? And that's what the SOAR model has really done for us in relation to this. And that's why I'm a little excited about the book.
You should be. It's a very important book.
Yeah, it is amazing how clear it is to me now that the foundation of success is me, self-leadership, how I manage myself. And it's still incredible about how little rigor is and focused on that with our education systems and the dollars we spend on training. Do you know, in 2019, trainingindustry.com said that that globally $370 billion was spent on leadership training. Listen, I work with a lot of leaders, but there's not a leadership concept that you can't Google today and get a video on YouTube. There's not. And learning those knowledge and skills are the easy part of leadership. Learning the steps in giving feedback, the steps in an effective coaching, the steps for this. None of that matters that you know all of that unless you've developed this foundation of self-leadership, that you're bringing your best self to those skills and knowledge. It is the differentiator. It is what we bring to that. But the emphasis is on the wrong syllable, right? It's focused on the technical knowledge and skills, because that's what we've been conditioned to our whole lives. The truth is, if we don't build that foundation, and unfortunately, most people have to go through self-exploration on their own because of pain. And pain is a great way to learn, and we all need it. I would never be as good as I hope to be, right? Unless I've gone through all the failures. And I got marks of failing as a leader, and I've been in double binds where I didn't have a good answer. And I've had to go apologize to people because I had a negative impact on them in ways that wasn't. And there's others that I'm not aware of, right? So it's hard, but those have enabled me to be the person I am. And I've still got a long way to go around that, but it's all built on this self-leadership concept.
It's really an interesting dichotomy that we like the idea of leadership. We've started to start promote things like servant leadership and thinking of others. I think it's too easy to default to trying to move away from self when you take that approach. And it's you can get there. You can help people by focusing on yourself. And in fact, it's probably the only way you can, because how else are you going to actually be able to engage with yourself, with other people? And that's such a great way of putting it. And that's why I love the term self-leadership. It really points out, here's where the onus is. You can change this by changing yourself and thus helping other people.
If you get someone that's great at self-leadership, they're going to do most of these things naturally, because they're going to engage with people. Most of us have good long-term purpose and goals. We lose them in the speed and the complexity and the challenge of the moment. And that's when we need them the most, right? That's why we call moments that matter your important, complex, relational situations, right? That's when you need to bring all these to the forefront. But unfortunately, the dynamics of the situation are threatening. I bring my bias. I react instead of respond at the worst time. I agree 1,000%. Listen, I teach skills and they're necessary. I'm not dismissing them. I'm just saying the importance between the two and really which one's going to be most important for long-term success. And are we giving the rigor in organizations to people to develop themselves, right? Are we in schools doing that? Are we as parents doing that? Are we doing it with ourselves? And it's hard to do it because the concepts are so spread out all over the place and we don't have the time and it's complex. This is an attempt to bring some of that together so people can start to not only build from a person perspective, but also how can I do things practically, right? So for example, we all know it's great to meditate every day. How many people do it, right? I know the benefits and I've had fits and starts with doing it, right? I've done it and not done it. But what does that look like in the workplace when I've just been, when my confidence has just been taken away because a coworker took responsibility for something that I did and they're getting acknowledgement for it, right? Or someone got a promotion that I think I deserved, or I just got that performance rating that I wasn't expecting. When I get punched in the gut, how do I respond? And that's what's going to define us. Well, my kid comes home with an issue that I wish they were doing it differently, but that's not the real issue. It's their hurting. And how do I respond, right? Those are the importance, right? No, that's the one that I don't want to get wrong. I'm going to mess up sometimes, but I want to get it right more often than not. And personally, that's going to define my success. Professionally, it's going to define our success as well.
I think it's an interesting idea that you focus on skills, which you do have to have those layers of skills. But one thing that they say over and over again is if you want to learn a skill, either apply it or teach it. And I think that goes back to the, like, if you're going to develop it, you have to develop your relationship with that skill. You have to have yourself injected into it. So at which point, like, you can't do that unless you practice it. You can read every book. You can know every benefit of meditation, to your point. Like, I can list you a bunch of the ones that I know. It doesn't do me any good, nor can I really engage with it unless I'm trying to teach it or if I've applied it.
Absolutely, because it is you, right? It's how those skills are coming out through you. And if you're not bringing your best self as applying those skills, the skills don't matter anymore.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it for sure. They don't matter. You can have the best skills on the planet, but if you can't apply them, if you can't get it right in the moment that matters, it's a skill on the wall. It's a poster.
Yep, 100%. People have spent their whole life learning how to acquire knowledge and skills that most of us are great at, right? That's not the gap. It takes work. And, you know, to become a doctor, I sure want someone that's acquired a lot of knowledge and skills. Don't get me wrong, right? Not that it's not important, but what's most important is what is that built upon, especially if you want to be successful and you define your own success, right? It's not what other people define as success, but if we want to be successful.
Well, and the connection to, like you said at the beginning, is it's not going to be perfect. It's not something that you just get a medal and it's like, oh, now you've got the sore process down and here's your medal and you're good from now on. You never have to worry about it again.
Tattooed on your forehead.
It's, yes. It's work, and there'll be many times where we mess up. And, you know, some of the things that, because of the shame culture and the can't make mistakes culture and the pressure, is, you know, somebody that may not have a lot of emotional intelligence or empathy that they've been able to practically engage with, they try it a couple of times, it doesn't work, and they're like, well, that's it. I'm just not an empathetic person. Never going to try that again.
Yeah, because I'm not good at it.
Yeah,
right?
Because I'm not good at it.
Gallup organization with StrengthsFinder, I love the way they define weakness. It's something that gets in the way of you being successful at something you want, right? We're all bad at a lot of things, right? But with your example, when that empathy stops me from being a good parent, or a good husband, or a good friend, or a good boss, that's when it's getting in the way of something that's meaningful to me. That's when it's a weakness. And I need to learn to mitigate that at least. Maybe I'll never be great at empathy, but how do I mitigate it so it's not stopping me from something I need, which is all around understanding self, being able to manage our outlook in those situations and understanding our best intentions in the moment, bringing the right actions and then learning from that through reflection.
Tony, this is a great conversation, and I love the framework you put together. I can't wait to read the book. I believe it will be coming out about the same time as this episode. We aren't totally sure. Do you have the date?
June 1st. We just got a new release date, so absolutely. We're so excited. Yeah, I think it'll be a great time.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We do have a couple wrap-up questions we'd love to ask you if you got a little time. First of all, what does authenticity mean to you?
So it's been something that's been on my mind a little bit, and I've got a little bit of a story around it, and it's not been more than a month, 6 weeks ago. I do a lot of executive coaching. I was working with this high riser earlier in her career. The organization was investing in her, and we were towards the end of our coaching engagement. And one of the things I like to do is I want to make sure that they have a focus after the coaching about where they're going to move forward. And You know, so I was like, what is the one big thing you want to take from this? And we had talked about influencing. We had talked about delegating. We had talked about high quality questions, a lot of different topics. And she answered me by saying, I don't know if this is what you're looking for, but this is what it is for me. So this is what I'm going to give you. And she said, I want my daily interactions to align with my divine purpose. Wow. It just stopped me in my tracks. And she goes, that may not be what you're looking for. I was like, that's exactly what
it's the only thing we're looking for.
Yeah, that's it.
For her to be able to align her daily intentions with her divine purpose. And so, you know, the practicality around that is we worked on what is your divine purpose? We made it practical. And then how does she check into it? But for me, it was just like, bam, right? It was like, and so when you ask the question around authenticity, I don't have a better answer than that. If I can align my daily actions to my divine purpose, I've been authentic. Now, I'll give a plug for getting right when it matters most. I think the way we do that is develop self, right? We got to be self-aware. We got to know our divine purpose. We got to bring the right actions, choose the right actions, manage our outlook, reflect and grow, all of those things. But she nailed it. And so for me, that is authenticity.
That's a wonderful and very succinct answer. I love it.
It's definitely powerful. It's like there's nothing to say after that.
That's the way I felt when she said it. It's like, you should be coaching me.
Yes. It's like, okay, a mic drop.
Right. You can take the clipboard now. I would like to take the other chair.
You have now graduated.
Yeah. Here's your badge. No. The other question we have for you is far simpler to answer. We would love just to give you a chance to let people know how they can find you, where to see your work, and where to see you.
A couple of ways is you can follow me on LinkedIn. I post regularly and I write a lot of articles on LinkedIn. I'm also a Forbes leadership contributor. And so you can follow me on Forbes and you can go to my website, clearviewleadership.com, and see my organization, the work we do. And we're actually developing a landing site for Getting It Right When It Matters, gettingitright.net. And so it'll be a landing site for our book. And by the time this comes out, that'll be out as well. So those would be all great ways to connect. And people can either follow me or if they have questions, I try my best to respond to any questions that come to me.
Yes. And we'll put all of these in the show notes so that everybody can find them easily. And looking forward to the book. We'll definitely be standing in line to buy it.
Yes.
Online. Because there's no in line physical anywhere anymore.
That's right.
It's refreshing Amazon.
Yes. Pre-order. As soon as it's in pre-order, Amazon will know that it's delivering it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tony. And I'm sure we could talk about all of this for hours and hours and days on end.
We'll have you back on for the next book.
Yes.
Yeah, no, thank you all for the opportunity. Thank you for the platform. And thank you for being gracious hosts.
Thank you so much for joining, Tony. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for listening to Uncover the Human, a Siamo podcast.
Special thanks to our podcast operations wizard, Jake Lara, and our score creator, Rachel Sherwood.
If you have enjoyed this episode, please share, review, and subscribe. You can find our episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.
We would love to hear from you with feedback, topic ideas, or questions. You can reach us at podcast@wearesiamo.com or at our website, wearesiamo.com, LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook. We Are Siamo is spelled WEARESIAMO.
Until next time, listen to yourself, listen to others, and always uncover the human.